If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tasteofchicago.com to order today.
Your noontime look at the financial world. What's trending in Chicago business? The midday numbers. John has the Wintrust Business Lunch now.
Money, 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 money.
Coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch, we're going to talk with Tom Appel, publisher of the Consumer Guide of Automotive. We're going to have Tim Shanley, the guy behind Da Bus, with his food drive and food donation to Matt from Firewater. And we'll have Phil Davidson, Communications Director at Mid-American Carpenters Regional Council. So stay tuned. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we're going to get into all that stuff and excited to have our first guest on, Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Tom, welcome to WGN.
Hey, Dane. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. It's always important to have you on. Obviously, I'm a big car guy. Love what it is that you do. Such important stuff. And when it comes to news, there's some big things happening. That whole merger thing with Nissan, and I mean, that's just crazy. Have you ever seen anything quite like that?
No, this will be the biggest auto merger probably ever, and certainly since I've been covering the industry. And it comes late in the year. The biggest story of the year comes right around Christmas, and it's a huge deal because it isn't, we knew Nissan was in trouble, but it isn't entirely clear yet what Honda gets out of this deal. But Honda will be running the show after the merger.
Well, sometimes you'll see brands, maybe in other products, where someone comes in and says, it's an iconic brand, it's got a built-in fan base. You know, there's stuff that we can do this or do with this brand with another vision. Do you see them kind of rolling it into it as another division, or do you see them kind of keeping the brand where it'll feel public-facing separate?
I think that public-facing, this is not going to be that big a deal immediately or even midterm. There's some technology sharing that's going to happen. We do know that Honda has really strong position in quality and in design and style, and people just like the product. But Honda's just not a big company. Nissan's a bigger company, but they run into some quality issues, and then they made some terrible mistakes post-COVID having to do with supply, and they were leaping perhaps faster into EVs than they probably needed to. And at a time when the public is mad for hybrids, Nissan has no hybrids to sell in the U.S.
Wow, that's crazy, because you'd think, you know, they would be more forward-thinking, just where you see the writing on the wall and trends, and it would be nice maybe as even just a backup, just to have something ready to go.
Yeah, and I think the industry really wanted to, and this isn't just Nissan's problem, the entire industry really wanted to skip hybridization and plug-in hybrids and go straight to pure electric vehicles. And pre-COVID, it looked like the energy was there and that the public was going to buy EVs at that rate and everything was going to be great. And now we're in this really weird period where the public is thinking twice about electric vehicles, still buying them, and there's still growth, but it's really slow, which means there has to be another parallel product line to hold over until we go pure electric.
So think about this, you know, the for the gift, you know, we talk about it, and cars are important, you know, all the time. You got to get around, but it is Christmas Eve, and on that gift giving, we all see those commercials, and I'm not sure if that's what happens on a regular basis, or if maybe the automotive industry is trying to say, like, hey, you're not really doing it right unless there's a car with a giant bow out in the driveway. I had a good friend of mine bought one of the Hummer EV pickup trucks. It's like 9,000 pounds. And we were like, hey, you know, you weren't necessarily all about electric vehicles, but this sort of straddles that line with being, notoriously inefficient, and still, it just feels kind of like, you know, it doesn't feel like Ed Begley Jr. would be driving it, but it's an EV.
I think that, yes, you're right, and it's hilarious. The Hummer EV might be the least efficient electric vehicle ever.
Right.
And it's profoundly expensive, and it does nothing that we want hybrid or electric vehicles to do, but there it is. It does benefit from being electric. It is very quick, and I guess it's very good off-road, but wow, what a crazy thing. And it's $100,000.
Right, that's what I told him. I'm still on brand, being, I don't want to say bad for the environment, but certainly inefficient and just, you know, just dedicated to performance and things. So, Todd, as we let you go, give information about, like, where people can find more information, and maybe I did want to ask too before we let you go, maybe the trends, like, is there like a hot Christmas car?
I don't know if there's a hot Christmas car right now. We do know that EV or hybrids are super popular, and it's very difficult to get like a Toyota RAV4 hybrid right now. And that's sort of almost the benchmark car that Americans are buying right now, this compact crossover that's built by Toyota that's known to be reliable and it's fuel efficient. And it's kind of, that's where the U.S. is right now. And there is a plug-in hybrid version of that that's very in very high demand as well. So we're more there than pure electric at the moment.
Yeah, I feel it's not a novelty anymore. I feel like it is the future. And for people who want to go into the future after this segment and find you, where can they go?
Oh, just go to consumerguide.com or check out the Car Stuff podcast.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.
All right. We're going to toss it now to news anchor Bob Kessler for the weather and markets.
The Dow is closed. It's been for 15 minutes. It's a short trading day. Up 390 points, 0.9%, 43,297. S&P 500 gained 66, about 1.1%, 6,040. And a big day for NASDAQ. It gained 266 points, 1.35%, 20,031. The forecast from the Permacil Weather Center, cloudy today, but mild temperatures, 39. Tonight, cloudy with a slight chance of showers after midnight, low near 30. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, Christmas Day, with a chance of rain in the morning, mainly south of the city, and then afternoon showers are likely. Tomorrow's high, near 40.
There's an accident in Bloomingdale on Army Trail Road just east of Gary Avenue. And Dixie Highway is closed in Kankakee County between County Road 16,000 East and State Line Road due to several earlier accidents.
It is the most wonderful time of the year. It's football season, right? And the guy on the line is a guy that takes his tailgating very seriously. He's in the Tailgating Hall of Fame as the leader, the visionary, founder of Da Bus, and all of that action that happens before Bears games for over 40 years. But he hasn't stopped there. He has a higher purpose built into everything that he's doing. Tim Shanley, welcome to WGN.
Hey, thank you, Dane. How are you? Thank you very much.
I wish I was better. I wish there was more positive Bears stuff to talk about, because I know that you live and die with the mighty Bears, but we always say that Tim Shanley, Da Bus, you guys are undefeated with the tailgate, and so maybe the Bears don't win, but you never lose at the tailgate.
You know, you're right there, and, you know, honestly, that's a great point, because, you know, that party, that El Bandito-sponsored party out there, we have everything going, flowing. There's plenty of food, a lot of energy. And as they were lining up this past game, this past Sunday, for the free shuttle buses, I've heard that comment more than ever is, you know what? We come here for the tailgate party. As they're heading into the game.
Well, it'd be nice,
more
Tim.
More fun than the game at this point.
We're it'd be nice, Tim, if they could come for both. Right. If maybe you could go ahead and win some things. We know that the team is close, a lot closer. Those games have been closer. They had that run where there's maybe four or five games against top opponents where, you know, it was just sort of freak occurrences. And so hopefully with the coaching, maybe a little help on the offensive line, the Bears will be back. But regardless, so here's the thing. You know, everybody has a great time at the tailgate, but you have a higher purpose built into that. So talk a little bit about here on Christmas Eve, the toy drive that you guys have sponsored and supported, how it helps the local community where the tailgate is. And then also, I think maybe in about 5 minutes or so, we're going to have Matt is going to jump on with you and talk about some of the food stuff that you did as well. So talk about that higher purpose that you build in.
Yeah, so, you know, we decided that, you know, obviously it's the Third Ward Toy Drive. We're located in the Third Ward. And we just wanted to give back. You know, the tailgating community, we tend to give back. And my idea here was that I base this on the fact that we were new there. There were new digs for us to be tailgating in. I wanted to definitely represent us, you know, in a different light than tailgaters really are. You know, let's face it, tailgating has that reputation. There's a lot of alcohol out there. There's a lot of things that can happen. It's kind of a negative type thing. And, you know, the way we do this is, as you well know, it's a totally different thing. So we decided we were going to hand some toys out to the ward office down there for the kids. That area has a lot of kids that are, you know, they're not well off, let's just say. And it started out with a little minivan, and we brought the minivan with the toys over to the ward office. And then we realized just how important this was to them and what it meant to them. And that's how that started. It was about 6 years ago or so, to where now inside our core group of charter members and our great sponsors across the board, we raised over $4,000 this year, close to $4,500 for the toys, as well as some donations for food for the Quinn Chapel down the street as well. So we make a big difference in the community, and it's based on the fact that our tailgate parties average 6 hours. We're there 8 games. Let's do that math. That's 2 days. 48 hours we're in that community. And we definitely want to make a difference. We want them to know that we're not there for part-time, but we're part of that community. And that was the goal. And it turns out now that they really count on us, and, you know, they look forward to it, and so do we. It's really great to have everybody come together for this common cause like you said, it's a higher cause. It really means something. It really makes a difference. And I'm really proud to take the lead on this. Again, I had no idea where this was going. It was a minivan full of toys from a few of the tailgaters now to where we're renting U-Haul trucks and just bringing loads of toys and fire water, donating a meal for 100 people at the Quinn Chapel last week, a roasted pig with all the sides, and right after their mass, and they're turning a mass right down the street from us. So, yeah, it's starting. Tailgating for us is on a different level, and it's taking a different course. We have responsibilities now. I think it's great.
So, Tim, is that because you've been doing this for 40 years and supporting, and you look very youthful, by the way, so people don't believe that when you tell them that. But is that where it was, where maybe you started out as like your average tailgater, just a young person trying to, you know, party a little bit and kind of celebrate and pregame a little bit? But as you've grown and you've kind of become, you know, a parent, you know, and a, you know, you just see sort of a bigger picture for all of it.
Yeah, that's how it started. It started by walking there. You know, I used to live 4 miles from Soldier Field, and we would be on the east side over there. There used to be some parking over there, and we would just walk by these people, and we kind of would just say hi, and then I ended up stopping there one day. They offered me a sandwich, and that's how it all started. Hanging there in that parking lot, you know, just a small group of us, and I kind of found something. You know, I found this passion. It just something clicked, and I just was going through. I had no purpose. I had no vision. I just had a passion for this.
So Tim,
and a true passion, and that's what turned it around for me, I believe.
Well, we've got one of them coming up. I know you're going to be in studio with us on Thursday for kind of a unique middle of the week game, and you're going to be in studio with us here at WGN as we preview that final kind of tailgate and just what is going to be happening. So for those people that are going to be hearing about that, like what do they experience when they're at your tailgate? How do they get involved? I know it's our good friends at Tailgreeter and tailgreeter.com, but what kind of things do they experience? They go there, they're imagining a tailgate, they're imagining maybe a parking lot with an open trunk and people standing around. There's so much more.
Absolutely. It's so much more. When you walk in there, it's a carnival-type atmosphere that, you know, we have fire water anchoring down our food for us. It's unlimited food when you walk in there. And then we also have a big bar set up for everybody. Our sponsorships, like, for instance, El Bandito, we have little tents set up with sponsors that pass out things. And it's just this great, great atmosphere. When people walk in there, they're completely blown away by this event. It's more like an event than it is even a tailgate party.
Yeah.
You know, with all the different sponsorships, and we have our core crew, our charter members, the seven tailgaters out there that really make this happen.
Well,
you know, again, fan friendly. You'll see fans from other teams with their costumes on, all painted up and walking around in there comfortable. It's just a great atmosphere. And it's just great. It's a great way to start the game.
It is a great atmosphere. It is definitely open and welcoming, regardless of what team that you support. We do have Matt on the line from Firewater, and he's such a big part of that experience at the tailgate. Of course, he'll be joining us on Thursday as well. And then also helped out on the Higher Purpose side, donating the food for the parish where you guys had that. So, Matt, welcome to WGN.
Hey, thanks, guys. Happy holidays to you. Timmy, how you doing, buddy? Can't wait to see you, man.
Hello, buddy. How are you, Matt? How's it going, butter?
Okay, you guys can do that on your own time afterwards. But, Matt, for the people who are going to be at the tailgate, what kind of stuff do they experience? Great barbecue. What do they get to experience at the tailgate?
You know, it's such a passion of ours that when they get there, they're going to see a lot of our classics, but also some of our twists. You know, Timmy puts a great touch on it, too. You know, we do our smoked pulled pork. We do our cheddar jalapeno brats, our smoked mac and cheese. We're always utilizing fresh bread from our main supporters and our great kind of family relationship with Alpha Bread. Shout out there to Jim Deere, who's always supported us, and the guys. I have all of them baking right now through the holidays to make sure we got fresh bread that melts in your mouth. Even when it's 10 degrees outside, it's steaming.
And then, Matt, I wanted to, like, have, because you got in on the Higher Purpose side of it, too. Talk a little bit about that, just how gratifying it is, especially this time of year, to be able to donate food for those causes related to the tailgate.
You know what? That's huge for us. Firewater in general, our entire family, both the leadership teams, all of our employees, full-time, part-time, we all, during the holidays, like to be major contributors to that kind of stuff. We're pretty much one of the number one sponsors of Cal's Angels, which is, for childhood cancer. And this one, as it comes to, is always, Timmy really going above and beyond and saying, Matt, hey, what do you think this year we'd like to donate to one of the wards down here? We want to do the toys, we want to do the food. And I'm like, Timmy, let's smoke a whole hog, or let's provide an entire brisket sliced fresh for each one of these people. Both if it's people that are less fortunate than ourselves, or, just a lot of the people that are working or putting in the time, we like to feed them too.
Got it.
So that's just a little bit of what we do.
Yeah. And Tim and Matt, we're going to see you guys on Thursday at the tailgate, tailgreeter.com, to get tickets for that. And, of course, we'll have links up at WGNradio.com. Merry Christmas, guys. Thanks so much for everything you're doing, and thanks for jumping on the show today.
Absolutely.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more 720 WGN. Are you picking these out, Tony? These are great. 720 WGN. It is Christmas Eve. It is a Wintrust business lunch. And on the line, we've got a guy who makes so much of the business go around. It's Phil Davidson. He's communications director at Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council and one of the hosts of the Workers' Mic right here on WGN Radio, Sundays from 8 to 9 a.m. Phil, welcome to your station.
Hey, Dane, how are you?
I'm good. How's everything going for you? Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you as well. Things are good. Things are good for the show. Our listenership continues to rise, so we're very excited about that. And we're going to close out the new year real strong. And things are great with the Carpenters Union as well. We're growing. We got more members coming in. Benefits are great. So, 24 is ending on a good note for us.
It's good to know. And now, for a guy who's so identified with working on a sort of a time of year where people are trying to not work, right, and have days off, is there a little conflict, on the branding side? Do you feel restless when you're at home and you're not working?
Well, in my line of work, which is communications, you're kind of always on the clock. There's always something arising. For instance, this week we had a little issue with an app that we have for our members that allow them to pay their dues directly on an app. So troubleshooting that, getting word out to the members of, hey, don't worry, things are going to get fixed here real soon. So, yeah, there is that sense of, all right, I'm home, it's the holidays, spend some time with the family. But you are always kind of looking at your phone and seeing what comes up. And it's just the nature of the beast, but it's why we love it. It's why we do this job and help our members and help working families.
One of the things that you guys do, obviously supporting workers and try to get them the best, whether situations or rights or benefits or any of that. And a lot of that is people are driving by and they may see a strike situation with a banner or the big blow up rat or mouse or whatever, but it doesn't necessarily, oftentimes affect them, what it is that they do or whatever it is they buy. But you're going to talk a little bit about, when it comes to Starbucks, I think that affects everybody. Like, talk about that. I don't know that people think of, that workforce and what it is that they may have as concerns or issues, but kind of fill us in on Starbucks.
Yeah, Starbucks, if you support working families and you support people trying to make a good, fair, and decent living, we're asking people to boycott Starbucks right now. What's going on is there's strikes across the country, including, I believe, 10 stores in the Chicagoland area. I think they have some more in the suburbs that are unionized. And basically, these employees who are part of Starbucks Workers United are saying that, look, we need better pay, we need better benefits, and they want Starbucks to commit to an agreement that they made earlier in the year to come to the bargaining table and resolve several unfair labor practices that have been levied against them and adjudicated by the National Labor Relations Board, including firing baristas who were trying to organize their members. That's illegal under the law. And so that's what they say. Look, Starbucks, you got to knock this off. And so they're going on strike. It's the strike before Christmas. And, so please, don't go buy Starbucks. As long as make coffee at home, God forbid. there's other alternatives out there. I know they've got a pretty large market share, but there's other alternatives to get your caffeine right now.
Well, Phil, talk about sort of like the labor, just the world, sort of the dynamic of it with so much information out there, so much news, so just so much on the internet available on the transparency of what companies are going through. When companies try to either not support the workforce or try to, you know, just do different things that maybe, you know, skirt, whether it's responsibilities or just things that they could do, right? It is the case that they make, like, hey, it's tough. Maybe you don't necessarily know, you know, all the expenses we have. A company like Starbucks, I got to think, just based on the overhead of just the coffee business, I've got to think they're pretty successful.
Well, all I can tell you is that, you know, they brought in a new CEO this year, and he received, I believe, a $110 million package.
Wow.
Pretty nice day's work, you know, and I think Starbucks' offer to their employees was a 1.5% wage increase. Now, that's just something doesn't jibe there when you've got your CEO making $110 million and you're offering, you know, your employees pennies on a dollar. You know, it's, you know, there's I think there's, what is it, 10,000 Starbucks across the country. So, yeah, there's a pretty healthy profit margin there. I think, I mean, where I live, there's probably three Starbucks within a one-mile radius. They're just everywhere. You know, right. They're ubiquitous. And that's part of the problem with this strike. You know, it's probably 95%+ of their stores are still open during this. So it makes it a challenge for these workers who are part of the union who are going on strike, but they're doing the right thing. And, you know, sometimes you can be effective through word-of-mouth campaigns, through letting your family members know, through social media, and just getting the word out there that, you know, what Starbucks is doing is unacceptable. And, you know, it's going to give them a reputational black eye. And, you know, I think they like to present themselves as a company that takes care of its employees. But, you know, they're not practicing what they preach, and that's what really this is about. So these workers are understandably fed up, and they're doing something.
Well, on the communication side, Phil Davidson, you're helping to raise awareness with that. And the other one that we're going to talk about is also something that I think almost everybody has some interaction with at some point, and that's Amazon. And specifically this time of year, it is the busiest time. I mean, every time I come home, there's like a pile of stuff from the Amazon folks, and there's a labor issue there as well.
Big time. Very similar to what's going on with Starbucks at Amazon. There's strikes happening across the country, including at their facility in Skokie, here in our neck of the woods. And it's similar. It's a case where these unionized warehouses are demanding better wages. They're demanding that they be recognized by Amazon. And Amazon is they're maintaining all along that no, these drivers at our warehouse facilities, they're not Amazon employees. They're contractors. So, no, we don't need to collectively bargain with them. We don't recognize them as employees, which is just an awful thing to do. And they actually, there have been some cases in federal courts that determine that Amazon is, in fact, a joint employer of these people. And they should be coming to the table. But, you know, when you're Jeff Bezos and you're a $2.5 trillion company with a T,
wow.
You know, you can fight these things. And you might have saw the news this week that Mr. Bezos is having another marriage in Aspen, and the expected cost is $600 million for his wedding.
Well,
yeah,
well,
that buys a lot of champagne and caviar, I suppose. But, I mean, just the optics of that, of this guy's throwing himself a $600 million second wedding, and his employees, you know, can barely make ends meet. I saw recently, you know, like the drivers in one of their facilities in Southern California, one of the most expensive places to live in the United States, making like $21 an hour. They're asking for $30 an hour. Even $30 an hour, like, barely allows them to find a home to live, you know? And this is what it's about. It's about giving people a livable wage so people can have a path to middle class. And, you know, Amazon doesn't seem to want to play ball on that. So that's why these strikes are happening.
Well, you can't do it without those drivers, those delivery people. Things don't go from point A to point B without them, and you're helping to raise awareness. As we let you go, Phil, give information for the Workers' Mic, like where, if there's a website for it, social media, and then when people can hear you.
Yeah, absolutely. We love all the listeners that are coming in, and we're always welcoming new listeners. We are on Sunday mornings, WGN. At 8 a.m., it's myself, Ed Maher, and Ken Edwards from the National Coalition of Labor. You can find us on the WGN website, and you can send emails at the workers' mic at WGNradio.com. And, yeah, we've got a great show. We'll be diving into a lot more of this stuff regarding Amazon and Starbucks this week. And, yeah, we really thank to all our listeners and everyone out there who are supporting the workers and the labor movement.
Thanks, Phil. Appreciate, especially this time of year, everything you're doing, and thanks for jumping on the show today.
Absolutely, Dane. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
All right, you two, back at you. Right now, though, we're going to toss it to the Wintrust Business Minute with Steve Krasanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Chicago metro area was home to the third most porch thefts in the U.S. in 2023. The website Safewise analyzes data on home safety and says the Chicago area had 2.7 million porch thefts last year, involving nearly $262 million in stolen merchandise. Chicago's the third best city for foodies in America. That's according to a new study that used social media hashtags about restaurant visits for its rankings. It's done by the social media casino website Hello Millions and analyzed 199 cities. Chicago had more than 4.1 million hashtags on Instagram and TikTok. New York City had the most with 12.5 million hashtag references. Los Angeles was number two. The local hashtags included Chicago Foodie, Chicago Restaurants, and Chicago Places to Eat. There were a handful of stores open on Christmas Eve for last-minute shoppers. Grocery stores like Costco, Jewel Osco, Kroger, Mariano's, Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, and more. Target, Kohl's, Walmart, and Costco will be open on Christmas Eve, but will close on Christmas Day. CVS and Walgreens will be open both days at most locations. All 24-hour Walgreens locations will be open as regular. Happy holidays, everyone. I'm Steve Krasanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now let's send it to traffic.
There's an accident in Arlington Heights on Rand Road, just west of Arlington Heights Road. There's also an accident with injuries in Hobart, Indiana, at the intersection of U.S. 30 and State Road 51. And Dixie Highway is closed in Kankakee County between County Road 16,000 East and State Line Road due to several earlier accidents.
And now here's Bob Kessler.
The Dow right now is, well, actually, it's closed on the day. It was a shorter trading day, so it closed having gained 390 points, 0.9%, 43,297. S&P 500 also finished in positive territory, up 66, 1.1%, 6,040. NASDAQ was up 266, 1.3%, 20,031.
And now the business of food.
Yeah, thank you. And picking up where we left off yesterday with our professional chef telling us how to prepare a restaurant-quality prime rib at home. Sign in again, please, sir.
Sure. My name is Mark Lupino. I'm the chief executive chef for Steak 48.
Yesterday, Chef Mark told us how to choose the roast, how to give it a great dry rub and put it in the fridge overnight, and what's next after. I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in Santa's toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, you gave your roast a dry rub, put it in the fridge overnight. What now, Chef Mark Lupino of Chicago's Steak 48?
Before you cook it, you want to let it sit out at room temperature for at least an hour.
Okay, well, we can turn the oven on while that's happening.
I turn the oven on 400 degrees to start. You know, let it get hot for a good 30 minutes, and then I throw the rib in there on the rack. Middle of the oven is always the best.
Make sure you have a rack.
A key thing to getting that rib cooked perfectly on all sides, all the way around, nice and evenly, is to have it on some kind of rack that lifts it up off the pan.
And
before you put it in the oven, put like a half cup of water in the bottom of the pan. So when your juices are dripping off of the rib, it doesn't burn.
Okay, in the oven it goes. And after about a half an hour,
you're going to see a nice browning on the outside. Then you turn the oven down to 200 degrees, maybe 225. It depends on how much time you want. About 200 degrees, it's going to take you about 20 minutes per pound. And that's to get yourself a rib that's going to be 115 degrees in the center.
He says that 115 in the middle ought to make everybody happy.
Unless your family likes to eat well done or medium well, you want to pull it at 115 degrees.
And when it's out of the oven,
you're going to rest that for 30 to 45 minutes. Take a piece of aluminum foil and tent it over the top of it. It allows all the juice to get absorbed back into the muscles inside there. And then I'll pull that rib rack and I'll set it on a cutting board. Still tented with the aluminum foil, but I set it on a cutting board. All the juices that are going to come off of it have come off.
Okay, we're just about out of time again. How do you make the au jus or gravy?
The au jus is just pan drippings. Whisk it up with a little bit of butter and flour. That's going to make exactly what you want.
Chef Mark Lupino of Chicago's Steak 48, his complete instructions, which include more than we had time to include here, such as the sides he likes, are at WGNRadio.com. Enjoy! I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
It is Christmas Eve. It is Dane here with you, in for John, until 2 p.m., the Wintrust Business Lunch, and excited to have on the line Mark Verkler. He's the owner and director of Vito's Vault, a new speakeasy in Chicago. Mark, welcome to WGN.
Hey, Hey, Dane, how are you?
I am okay. So talk about this. This is, you know, it's the time of year when people want to get out, celebrate a little bit, maybe with family and friends, you know, have a nice, you know, time out with some food and some drink. And so tell us a little bit about Vito's Vault.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Yeah, we're, so Vito's Vault, we're 1920s dinner theater speakeasy. So the point is you're basically stepping back in time when you come through our door into 1929, the Roaring Twenties, where it's prohibition in Chicago, and you have to have a password to get in the door.
Nice.
And you're greeted by a guy with a Tommy gun at the door.
What?
So we try to make it pretty authentic, but it's all in good fun. But yeah, so we have a great dinner. I always thought that the two basic main things you need to have when you're doing dinner theater is good dinner and good theater.
So,
we have a great dinner, a great meal, lots of choices, and then the theater. We have a great cast of characters and talented singers and dancers, and we have a great time.
So when it comes to the entertainment side, you're going to tell us, you know, what people will experience. I wanted to get your thoughts on the speakeasy. You know, you think other than maybe illegal libations, you know, were there, you know, what kind of things did, is there a 1920s cuisine? I mean, is there something, I know they had the dance styles with the flappers and you had a bunch of things, and of course, you know, rampant crime and murder, you know, that was all happening, and I guess you've paid attention to that. But on the food side, what do you guys have?
Well, we did a little research on that, and it's hard to come up with things that were only around in the 20s. We kind of stuck to some basic staples. We have a steak, a New York strip steak. We have an Atlantic salmon dish, chicken breast. We found a fun recipe called the Marry Me Chicken. It's so good that your partner will want to propose to you.
Nice.
It's like a creamy garlic sauce on that. And then a pasta with meatballs. So we kind of stuck to the basics. We did some research, like I said, and one of the things that was very popular back then was shrimp cocktails. Nice. But I thought that was going to be a little bit too complicated for our needs, so we didn't go with that. But it's great food.
When it comes to the entertainment side, what do people experience? I guess is it a set entertainment, like a themed kind of show that people see, or is it different entertainers throughout the course of the week?
No, it's the same cast generally. You only have a cast of about seven. And so we got the mugs and the flappers, and it's a 1920s musical review.
Nice.
I don't want to give the whole thing away, but it's possible that we might get raided by the cops while we're there. and he might pull you up on stage to give you a sobriety test while you're in the audience. So we do audience participation. It's a lot of fun, and you never know what's going to happen when you pull people up from the audience. It can be a lot of very interesting things happen.
It sounds great. And I love that. You know, that's something that's just such a big part of Chicago, is that sort of romantic attachment to, you know, to sort of gangsters in the 20s and the, you know, all the things that go along with it, including the prohibition. I'd love to see the secret password. So, Mark, give information like where the location for it, and then whether it's social media wise or website where people can keep up with all the action.
Sure. Yeah. We're located in Jefferson Park neighborhood, Northwest Side. The address is 5901 West Lawrence Avenue, just barely within the city limits. We're only about three blocks from Harwood Heights. You can go to vetosvault.com to buy tickets. You do have to purchase tickets ahead of time. You can't just walk in. Then you'll get an email explaining all the details, and it'll give you the password in the email. Kind of strange for the 20s to send an email, but that's what we got to do for the modern times.
So,
we are on social media on Facebook, Vito's Vault. And Instagram is of Vito's Vault Shy, C-H-I, on Instagram. For some reason, Vito's Vault was taken, so we had to go with that one.
We'll have links up at WGNRadio.com for all of that. And Mark Verkler, owner and director of Vito's Vault, thanks so much for everything. Merry Christmas, and
Merry Christmas. Thanks for jumping on the show. Thank you. Take care.
All right, we are going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have more. It's Christmas Eve, and Dane here on 720 WGN.